Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. And don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, available at retailers throughout Pennsylvania.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante, along with Mike Agavino, executive producer of the podcast With the Benefit of Hindsight. And believe me, guys, you want to download it. You want to follow it. The one-hour show that we have with Mike, and Mike, I really appreciate your time here, but 1 hour does not do this story justice. I know you had told me you have there's about 50 hours of information, so there's just so many layers to this story. We talked about the incident, Mike McQueary, the shower, seeing Sandusky and what he witnessed. We got back to Aaron Fisher, where this thing really started with the state, was the investigation that was prompted by victim number one, Aaron Fisher. That ultimately led us to back to Mike McQueary and that story. And initially, they had trouble finding victim two, the young man who was in the shower. Eventually, he was found, and it was a young man by the name of Alan Myers. Let's pick up the story there, because initially, Alan Myers was not a witness for the state. He was probably a witness for the defense, wasn't he?
Yeah, this is an amazing, amazing story. So, Ziegler's investigation leads him to believe that that the boy in the shower is one of several possible people who have been spoken to by the police over the course of the summer of 2011, and he has multiple conversations with Sandusky, another one with Gary Gray, who was a key friend of Jerry Sandusky's, and that leads him to Alan Myers, and he comes to find out that that Alan Myers is probably the Second Mile alum that Sandusky was closest to in terms of being a father figure. He had been there for his graduation night, standing in as his father. He had attended Alan's wedding. Alan had drove over 10 hours to attend Jerry's mother's funeral. Alan had lived with the Sanduskys for 3 months while he was attending Penn State. It was a very, very close father-son type relationship. Alan was a former Marine, a married former Marine, and police had gone to see Alan in September of 2011, at which time Alan had told the police that he believed they were trying to get him to lie. They were being so aggressive with him on their questioning and pushing him, and he asked them to leave. He ended the interview with police. He, after the indictments came down against Sandusky in November, came to the realization that he must be the boy in the shower from the various reports. And he approached Sandusky's defense attorney, Joe Amendola, and gave a statement to his investigator saying that he was the boy in the shower. He knew things that only the boy in the shower could know, things that hadn't been released publicly yet, such as the locker shutting that McQueary said he had shut a locker to make it obvious to them that there was someone else in the locker room. And Alan, in his statement, had pointed to hearing the locker. And more important than that, Alan's statement was that Jerry was a father figure to him. He had done so much for Jerry during the course of his life that Jerry never abused him. that night or any other night. We also came to find out that Alan had written a letter to the Patriot News and had also written a letter to the Attorney General's office vouching for Sandusky. I should clarify that he wrote those letters before knowing he was, quote unquote, victim to the boy in the shower. But when he came to Amendola, he knew that that it was him. And so Amendola was very confident that that they were going to be able to present Alan Myers as a witness for the defense and blow the whole case up. In fact, they thought that several other quote-unquote victims were going to change their story as well as Alan. But Alan got himself into a bit of trouble and had had at least one DUI, possibly a second DUI, and he had turned to a local state college attorney by the name of Andrew Shubin, who would in total represent nine of the Sandusky victims before everything is said and done. And over the course of time with Shubin, it's unclear exactly what was said or how Myers was convinced not to defend Sandusky and become a witness for him. I think that in all likelihood, Shubin convinced Myers that there were other victims, that maybe Sandusky chose not to abuse him for some reason, but he had abused others, and that if he came out, he would destroy the case, and Sandusky was a pedophile, and that Alan agreed on that basis not to testify on behalf of Sandusky and just to sit on the sidelines until the smoke cleared. And that's exactly what he did. He officially became a witness, but then there was an agreement between the prosecution and the defense that he would not testify at trial. And John Ziegler is pretty certain that during the actual trial, Alan Myers was in a cabin in a undisclosed location in central Pennsylvania so that he could not be called on as a witness at trial. So so we know who victim two is. And by the way, the prosecution knew who victim two was and chose in their closing remarks to say that the identity of victim two was known only to God, quote unquote, which is the name of our episode number 8, where we go in depth into the victim two story. But he was clearly someone very, very close to Jerry Sandusky that considered Sandusky a father figure and was never abused by Sandusky and was convinced to, for some reason, change his story and not come out as a witness for the defense.
Mike, I think one of the issues here is in looking at the individual cases that, you know, and Aaron Fisher and Alan Myers, it's easy to see, well, perhaps they were manipulated, perhaps there was pressure from the state, but it wasn't a case of one witness or two witnesses or two alleged victims. There were, I believe, 8 to 10 victims, and it's kind of a hurdle, I think, for a lot of people to say, hey, wait a minute, are you telling us that all 10 of these witnesses were influenced, were lying on the stand, or not good witnesses?
Well, actually, it's worse than that, because Penn State ended up settling with over 30 people who filed complaints against Jerry Sandusky.
Well, right? And so, again, let me just stop you there for one sec. But it also helps the other side of the argument if there were at least 30 people claiming that they were victims of Jerry Sandusky. That's an even, you know, longer bridge to cross to say all 30 of them were lying.
Absolutely. And it's why you, me, and millions of other people assumed that Sandusky had to be guilty, because how could there be that many victims? But what really changes the course of this, of events, is the Penn State Board of Trustees made a decision in the middle of that week of in November of 2011 to, on the basis of nothing but stories and what was in the presentment and what was in the news, they made the decision to fire their coach of nearly 50 years, to fire one of the most admired university presidents in the country, in Graham Spanier. And at the point they did that, at the point the Board of Trustees fired Paterno and Spanier, it became crucial to the university, to the board, that it all be true. Because if it's not true, oh my God, they just fired Joe Paterno and Graham Spanier. So they bought the narrative. We all bought the narrative. But once they bought the narrative, now they're actually going out and recruiting victims. They're actually using the a local reporter by the name of Sarah Ganim, who ends up winning a Pulitzer Prize in this story, unbelievably, when you analyze everything in hindsight, is they actually reach out to her and get her to reach out to, we haven't even talked about the 1998 story, but she reaches out to the mother in the 1998 incident and tells her that the case is likely being dropped if they don't find more victims. And so you've actually got like a Craigslist ahead. John refers to it as the bat signal that goes up in State College, where it is now understood that if you come forward and claim you were abused at the hands of Jerry Sandusky, you will become an anonymous millionaire. So people knew that if they were in Second Mile at around that time period and came forward and made a complaint against Jerry Sandusky, that the university was going to do no diligence in investigating your complaint, they were going to pay it or settle at some kind of payment, because they had declared Sandusky guilty by declaring a cover-up and declaring Paterno guilty.
We're going to stop quarter number three. On that note, Mike, we will pick this up in quarter number four, so make sure you stay tuned for that.
Hey, y'all, it's Blake Shelton here, introducing y'all to the all-new American Brewed Smithworks Hard Seltzer Lemonade. Made for days when schedules are empty and coolers are full, Smithworks Hard Seltzer Lemonade is a perfect choice for celebrating good times. Available now in four Heartland-inspired flavors. Check out smithworksusa.com for a store nearest you.
Premium malt beverage with natural flavors. 5% ABV. Copyright 2021 Smithworks Beverage Company, Rochester, New York.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.